in the limelight.
There are longer-term solutions to solving the world's ongoing refugee crisis, such as addressing the root causes that endanger people's lives and livelihoods. But a fundamental principle of any morally functioning government is to uphold the human rights of people to seek safety, and not shift that responsibility to states with less developed asylum systems. Here we present you an article in this regard, written by Joshua Surtees, a journalist and former writer for UNHCR, under the heading, "Rich Britain Sending Refugees to Rwanda Isn't Burden Sharing. It's Shameful Exploitation." Please stay with us to hear more about the story. Joshua Surtees wrote, "In my time working for the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, a stark fact was often mentioned. The vast majority of the world's displaced people are hosted by the world's poorest countries. Today, 85% of the refugees live in developing countries, while the richest nations host just 15%. While Rwanda might be developing economically, it is still among the world's 25 poorest countries. The UK is among the world's 10 richest countries. To acknowledge the disparity of wealth between the two nations and decide that Rwanda is better able to accommodate people attempting the treacherous journey across the channel takes a huge leap of the imagination." The deal announced by UK Home Secretary Priti Patel in Kigali on Thursday, April 14th, demonstrates the government's tenacious commitment to positioning Britain as a country that is close to the world and to those who need its sanctuary the most. There has been a great deal of political debate and condemnation since the policy was announced, and the government arranged for the arrival in Rwanda of the British media it thought best placed to help it trumpet this maneuver in time for the local elections. But there are still questions we must ask to ascertain whether this is a cynical ploy or a thought-through policy. Joshua Surtees said, "Is it because Rwanda has more geographic capacity, perhaps? More free land or housing infrastructure? Is Britain really bursting at the seams? Rwanda's population density is almost double that of Britain's. It is a country almost twice as crowded as ours, yet, per capita, it already hosts five times as many refugees as the UK, as well as hosting Congolese and Burundian refugees. Rwanda has recently offered itself as a host country for the emergency evacuation of refugees trapped in dire conditions in Libya." In the introduction to the Home Office's Memorandum of Understanding with Rwanda, the UK boasts of having taken in 25,000 Syrian refugees as a way of demonstrating its long, proud history of providing protection to those who need it. This claim is laughable. More than 6 million Syrians have fled their country in the 11 years since war began. For much of the crisis, Lebanon hosted 2 million Syrians, representing a third of Lebanon's 6 million population. Bangladesh, one of the world's most densely populated countries, hosts close to 1 million Rohingya refugees from Myanmar. Poland is currently hosting 2.7 7 million Ukrainians. These figures put in context what it really means to protect those in need. The memorandum speaks of burden sharing during refugee crises. Rwanda, a country that has experienced its fair share of crises, is already shouldering its share of the burden. The UK comfortably has the capacity to take in people crossing the channel. It is neglecting its share of the burden while persuading Rwanda to carry more. How the Home Secretary managed to convince the Rwandan government to accept this arrangement may become apparent in due course. When Australia utilized the tiny island state of Nauru for a similar purpose, it gave aid in return. Australia, an immensely privileged country, effectively paid a less economically fortunate country to take desperate people off its hands, in some cases for years. The British government is callously copying the Australian playbook. While its PR agents in the press trumpet this coup as some kind of triumph. The Daily Mail's front page read, Rwanda plan to smash the Channel gangs. The Daily Express said, bold plan to send both migrants to Rwanda. As though the Prime Minister had overseen a selfless act of reason, humanity, bravery, striking a blow for compassion, saving England from the scourge of people simply trying to escape death and poverty. When Boris Johnson referred in his speech on Thursday, April 14th, to people illegally entering the country, he was using the worst kind of semantics. Refugees fleeing the conflicts or persecution do not have the luxury of entering Britain legally. If they had the time and opportunity to apply for a UK visa, they would not, in essence, be refugees. Seeking asylum routinely involves entering a territory without prior permission. When UNHCR's Asia and Pacific Director, Enrica Ratawat, visited Nauru in 2018, he reported his shock at the immense toll that long-term detention had taken on people's mental health. Over 80% had been diagnosed with PTSD, trauma, and depression. He told the press the sense of hopelessness and despair was extremely tangible. In Greece, in 2020, asylum seekers living at Moria Reception Center on the island of Lesbos burnt it down in what was perceived by many as a protest at the poor conditions and dangerous levels of overcrowding. We should not automatically assume that Rwanda's model of hosting asylum seekers will follow that of Lesbos of Nauru. Indeed, there are some good news stories about refugee integration there. But Rwanda, which Johnson describes as one of the world's safest countries, is also a country that cannot provide an acceptable life conditions for its citizens because it is one of the world's poorest countries. What guarantees can we have that non-citizens will be well received? Rwanda has internal transit centers where people deemed undesirable, including beggars, are sent in order to keep the streets looking appealing for tourists attracted by the country's international marketing campaigns. Rwandans who oppose or criticize the government are liable to be informed on by neighbors, placed under surveillance, blackmailed, tortured, sent to rehabilitation camps, or even killed. Many Rwandans were forcibly returned to the country from refugee camps in neighboring countries in the years after the 1994 genocide. Many continue to risk their lives or liberty to trek through remote jungles to escape and flee to Uganda as refugees themselves. In reporting Patel and Johnson's plan, the Daily Telegraph said that migrants will be encouraged to settle in Rwanda. The agreement doesn't appear to give them much choice in the matter. Their options, should Rwanda not turn out to be a safe or sustainable place for them, will be somewhat limited. The memorandum says Rwanda will ensure that it will treat each relocated individual and process their claim for asylum in accordance with the Refugee Convention. But what about the UK's obligations to abide by the convention that it is a signatory to? What about that claimed long and proud history of protection? UNHCR, the organization designed to uphold the convention, has said it will delay its judgment on the legality of Patel's deal until its legal teams in Geneva have analyzed the details. Though, its position is clear. It said in a statement, UNHCR does not support the outsourcing of asylum states' obligations. There are longer-term solutions to solving the world's ongoing refugee crisis, such as addressing the root causes that endanger people's lives and livelihoods. But a fundamental principle of any morally functioning government is to uphold the human rights of people to seek safety, and not shift that responsibility to states with less developed asylum systems.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, definition of the holy month of Ramadan. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. Ramadan, or the holy month of Ramadan, is the ninth month of the Islamic calendar. It is a month during which Muslims observe fasting from morning twilight, which is the Fajr prayers, the morning prayers, to the evening twilight, which is the Maghrib prayers. The term Ramadan is literally driven from Al-Ramd, which means burning heat of the sun. It is believed that this name is given to the fasting month due to the thirst experienced during fasting. You know, if you're under the scorching heat of sun and it is warm, the climate is warm, the weather is warm, and you are sweating, right? And you're not allowed to drink water. Just imagine, right? This feeling that you have at that point and the realization of how important water is for you to survive, this is one of the aspects of the philosophy behind the month of Ramadan. So we start knowing about the blessings that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has granted upon us, and we take them for granted. It is narrated from the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, that the name is given to the fasting month because fasting burns the sins. Now, this is another dimension of why Ramadan is named Ramadan, that the sins and the shortcomings and the flaws that we have, you know, they need to be burned. They need to be eradicated from our lives. And how do we do that? Ramadan is the month where we practice to stay away from every sort of sin and unrecommended act. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing the definition of the holy month of Ramadan, and why this month is called Ramadan. According to some narrations, Ramadan is one of the names of Allah, and hence, the more appropriate way to refer to the month of fasting is to say the month of Ramadan, not just Ramadan. Narrations allude and point to this fact that since it is a name of Allah, it should not be just used without a prefix, right? The month of Ramadan, or Shahrul Ramadan, or the Mah of Ramadan, right? Or, in Farsi it's called Mah, and then in Urdu it's called Mahina. So, you know, all of these prefixes are recommended to be used before the word Ramadan. We should, however, bear in mind that the term Ramadan without the prefix, the month, is also mentioned in many ahadith with reference to the month of fasting. You know, it is the month where Muslims and the believers, they fast. Hence, it seems that the recommendation for the expression of the month of Ramadan, that is, to add the prefix, is with respect to the Quranic expression as mentioned in Surah 2, which is chapter 2, and verse number 185. And as honor to this holy month, which is referred to in the words of Prophet, the month of Allah, Shahrullah. You know, there are many beautiful things about the month of Ramadan, and one of them is that Allah has called it to be His own month. Now, we do acknowledge that all of the months and all of the times and all of the ages, they belong to Allah and none else. But when it comes to this special month, Allah Himself calls it to be His own month. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Israeli forces have stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied old city of Al-Quds and attacked the Palestinian worshippers there. The raid began at dawn on Friday when Israeli forces entered the compound through the Moroccan gate, also known as the Mughrabi gate, throwing stun grenades and shooting rubber bullets at the crowd indiscriminately. 400 Palestinians were arrested. Media reports said the Israeli forces also attacked paramedics and press crews, chased them in the courtyards of Al-Aqsa Mosque, and beat a number of them. The Palestinian Red Crescent Society reported that 152 fasting Palestinians had been transferred to hospitals in the occupied Al-Quds for injuries as a result of the raid. Following the Friday prayers, people held rallies in the Gaza Strip in solidarity with the Palestinians at the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
They want it for themselves. They want the Palestinians gone. They want Islam to be gone from Palestine and Christianity too, everything except Judaism. So really, they don't mind having this as a flashpoint for them, as a center of dispute. They want this dispute to go on until they win. That's what they're looking for. And every time they bring settlers there to cause trouble, it's part of what they see as a continuing war for their control of the land. That's what this is about.
The regime has stepped up its deadly acts of aggression across the Palestinian territory since the beginning of Ramadan, as a result of which, Palestinians put up a stronger resistance to counter the aggression. The events unfolding in the occupied territories are reminiscent of clashes between the Israeli forces and Palestinians in the West Bank last year that led to an 11-day war between the resistance groups in Gaza and Israel. Over 250 Palestinians were killed in the war, many of them were women and children. Observers now believe that more confrontations are imminent. As the pressure mounts, Palestinians have stepped up their retaliatory operations against Israelis. Over the past 3 weeks, Palestinians have carried out 4 such retaliatory operations, killing over a dozen Israelis. Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has given the regime's forces a free hand to crack down on Palestinians. He has also called on Israeli civilians with gun licenses to carry weapons in public.
They can find ways to make the Israeli occupation painful, and already actually quite a few Israelis over the last decade have emigrated elsewhere. You have Israeli immigration into Europe and the United States and to Australia. Possibly as many as a million Israelis have done that. If the Palestinians can make it painful enough for the Israelis might just disappear.
When some Arab states announced the normalization of ties with Israel, they claimed that their moves will help the Palestinian cause. But the events of the past couple of years have shown that the only contribution their newly established ties with Tel Aviv made to Palestinians has been even more suffering. In the absence of any accountability, Israel is expected to put even more pressure on the people of Palestine. But the Palestinians are indicating that they remain steadfast to keep fighting against the Israeli occupation with or without international support.
Racial tensions are running high in Grand Rapids, Michigan, after police this week released footage of a white officer lying on the back of an unarmed black man, shooting him in the head. Patrick Leoya, 26, was killed on April 4th after a struggle during a traffic stop. State police are investigating the incident. The officer is currently on administrative leave pending the outcome of the investigation. Authorities say he would not be identified unless criminal charges are pressed against him. The family of Leoya called the video of the shooting, quote, the most horrifying thing they've ever seen, and asked for the officer's name to be released. The shooting has led to protests in the area, with activists expressing grief and frustration with years of inaction on policing issues by Grand Rapids leaders.
Given the U.S.'s long history of police brutality, from Rodney King to George Floyd and now today, we can't be shocked. And I think that the Black community should and is in and is justified in being angry at the establishment and seeking methods outside of the establishment and the political structure for seeking change.
The fatal shooting of the unarmed Black man by the white officer is the latest on a very long list of similar incidents. Police killings of Black men have dominated national debates in recent years, particularly after the 2020 murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis, which triggered persistent protests across America. The deep-rooted problem lingers on. So far this year, over 250 people have been fatally shot by on-duty police officers nationwide. The latest case is another bitter reminder that the system in the United States has failed to take measures to resolve the pressing problem. The April 4th shooting has once again brought deadly police violence in America under the spotlight. Civil rights organization, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, has been quick to react. The NAACP, which tries to advance justice for African Americans, said in a statement that the shooting is horrifying and deeply frustrating because Americans had meaningful legislation designed to avoid exactly what they are witnessing in this week's police video. It said the involved officer has blood on his hands, and so do the senators who killed the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act. The piece of legislation was passed by the U.S. House of Representatives in March 2021, but bipartisan negotiations in the U.S. Congress over the police reform bill ended in stalemate. The sweeping legislation was passed by the House amid outcry after the murder of George Floyd. It would have banned chokeholds and qualified immunity for law enforcement. It would have also created national standards for policing in an effort to increase accountability.
Lack of efforts to reform the system that are coming from the top. There's no real incentive for legislators to reform when they are benefiting off of the corrupt policing system and corrupt judicial system that this country has. There's also a lack of struggle in the organizations, a lack of structure in the organizations that are struggling against police brutality.
The failure to pass the police reform has been considered as a setback for the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden, who had energetically supported the legislation. President Biden has faced growing calls to sign an executive order to reform the police, but has failed to act. Experts believe ethnic minorities in America, especially African Americans, are facing a very deep-rooted problem that will not be resolved anytime soon. Observers have largely attributed this to the racist roots of American policing and social structures.
Nearly 7 weeks have passed since the start of the war in Ukraine. Russia is now focusing on taking territory in the eastern regions of the country. Ukraine and Russia are building up their military forces in the eastern regions of Donetsk and Luhansk.
It's a very serious situation. The fact that the Russian forces are there have made significant moves, especially in the east of Ukraine and other parts, is unacceptable to the United States, and they're not prepared to negotiate. And I believe that their advice to Zelensky, docked again to Biden today, to assured him of about what was $130 million more worth of equipment, that they want them to continue fighting, to continue resisting, but they're not going to send any troops there.
Over the past weeks, Ukraine has enjoyed the support of Western powers, especially the United States. Western nations have sent different types of weapons to Ukraine worth millions of dollars. The U.S. is to announce $750 million in new military aid for Ukraine. The new military aid package would likely include military equipment such as unmanned surface vehicles, Mi-17 helicopters, howitzers, and protective equipment against possible chemical attacks. The Pentagon has hosted leaders from the top 8 U.S. weapons manufacturers to discuss the industry's capacity to help arm Ukraine, even if Russia's invasion lasts as long as 2 years.
So there will be a lot more people dying because the United States is insistent, I think, that Putin's forces have to be forced out of Ukraine before this is all over. And it's not going to be happening anytime soon.
Resupplying as well as planning for a longer war were expected to be discussed at the meeting. The Pentagon has said smaller systems such as Javelin anti-tank missiles and Stinger anti-aircraft missiles have proved to be the most useful weapons. Washington and its Western allies have been shipping these weapons to Ukraine on a nearly daily basis. A partnership between Lockheed Martin and Raytheon Technologies makes the anti-tank Javelin. Raytheon manufactures the Stinger, which shoots down aircraft. Ukraine is ramping up its campaign for military aid even as the U.S. accelerates shipments of weapons to Kiev. Arms lobbyists and their underlings in Congress and the Pentagon are scrambling now to unlock more funds for the military-industrial complex to pump out weapons to Europe.
Unless there are other parties within the world community and also even within NATO to resist this type of policy, it's going to be a very long and costly war. And the cost is going to be borne by the world community, which will suffer in increasing food prices, increasing energy, increasing starvation for millions of people.
But amid the unanimous support for Ukraine, there are critical voices that have been raised against supplying weapons to Ukraine. It's argued that the money channeled to the military industry is used to fuel more bloodshed in Ukraine. Hawks in the West lobby recklessly for NATO to impose a no-fly zone over Ukraine.
They believe that a world empire effectively can be created, in which the United States is the fundamental maker of the rules. Now, every attempt to create an empire in the world has ended up in either failure or disaster. They haven't learned those lessons.
That could be a direct military confrontation between Russia and Ukraine. It's also feared that a nuclear war is also becoming a possibility. A recent poll has shown that the U.S. is being drawn into an all-out war with Russia.
A new report released by Iran's Nur News website on Monday says undercover Israeli military personnel deployed to U.S. bases in the region are conducting their own missions independent of American forces present in those bases. The report says the important point about regional presence is the deployment of undercover military and intelligence agents of Israel in some regional countries that enjoy close relations with Iran. Experts believe that the main goal behind the presence of the Israeli agents in some regional countries is to spy on and collect direct information related to Iran's important bases and sensitive facilities.
It's a very dangerous precedent. What we now know is that the IDF and Zionist regime's different intelligence units like Mossad are working within Central Command, are working alongside U.S. Forces, NATO forces, and their allies, the Gulf states in the region. And they are their main focus is to control what's going on in the region and ultimately to fight against Iran. And this is a dangerous escalation. And we've seen it now over the past few years, first with the United States removal from the JCPOA, the brutal assassination of General Soleimani, and the increasing hawkish nature of U.S. foreign policy.
The report notes that although the Iranian armed forces are closely monitoring these provocative moves, for which the host countries are also responsible, the nature of these actions will increase tension and instability in the region and can lead to unpredictable conditions. It added that high-resolution documented photos are available on the presence of Israeli regime's aircraft and espionage equipment in the U.S. bases in some regional countries, which confirmed the intelligence gathered in the field on Israel's anti-Iran activities in the region. According to the new report, senior officials of countries where Israeli undercover experts have been present have been aware of the Israeli military and intelligence presence in their countries, but prefer to keep silent. The project started when Israel was transferred from the United States European Command, EUCOM, to U.S. Central Command, CENTCOM, in order to enable the Tel Aviv regime to carry out its intelligence and military conspiracies in West Asia following the withdrawal of the United States from the region. While some believe the normalization of ties between some Arab states and Israel has laid the groundwork for and provided Tel Aviv with a pretext to conduct its operations close to Iranian borders, others say the U.S. is assigning tasks to Israel to carry out in its stead in the region.
Their main focus is on Iran, and they are having in the region allies like Arab Gulf states and others who are focused on this. And secondly, it's to help the United States, who sees China as a threat because China and Iran's close ties and now their alliance is a threat to U.S. Zionist stability and their control in the region. So I think that what we see here is the move to Central Command is primarily against Iran, but also undergirding that from the United States is Iran's relationship with China.
Iran has shown that it won't stand idly by in the face of foreign aggression. The January 2020 attack on the Ain al-Assad air base in Iraq housing U.S. troops is one example. Iran carried out the retaliatory missile attack in the aftermath of the U.S. assassination of General Qasem Soleimani and Iraq's deputy commander of the Popular Mobilization Unit, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, in Baghdad. Iranian officials have, on so many occasions, noted that the Islamic Republic won't tolerate the presence of Israel in the region, highlighting the threats that the Israeli regime poses to the regional nations. Will they heed the warnings? Only time can tell.
In the limelight.
The Palestinian combatant groups campaigning for liberation of their homeland should know that they're not alone in this holy struggle, says Kayhan, international staff writer, in an article published under the heading Time for Practical Steps to End Zionist Sacrilege in Palestine. Stay tuned for more. Whatever the facts and behind-the-scenes ploys that could be traced to corridors of power in Washington, on Friday, April 15th, the sanctity of the Al-Aqsa Mosque was again defiled in the fasting month of Ramadan by the dirty Israeli regime troops who disrupted a peaceful gathering of Muslim worshippers after the early dawn prayer by attacking them with batons, tear gas, and rubber bullets to injure at least 158 Palestinians. As usual, the Muslim world verbally condemned the latest sacrilege at Al-Aqsa Mosque, but without any plans for any coordinated practical moves on the ground. To peals of laughter at this impotence from the Zionists and the Americans, now joined by the treacherous Arab clan leaders from the Persian Gulf. The only thing that is worrying, the Israelis in their merry killing of Palestinians over the past few days in the West Bank prior to Friday's foray into the sacred precincts of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, is the statement from Gaza by the Palestinian freedom fighting movements, including Hamas, Islamic Jihad, and others who have the rockets to respond to such acts of terrorism. They had made the Zionists taste Palestinian retaliation last year in the operations codenamed Sword of Beit al-Muqaddas following the Israeli atrocities in Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood, and could now use some of their rapidly improving projectiles to target the Zionist criminals. The wording of the warning is clear. We will draw the line again in defense of Beit al-Muqaddas, and we will launch a new era. Weapons for weapons, and force will only be met by force, and we will defend the sanctity of Al-Aqsa by all our might. The Palestinian combatant groups campaigning for liberation of their homeland should know that they're not alone in this holy struggle. Lebanon's legendary anti-terrorism movement, the Hezbollah, with its sophisticated arsenal, is also with them. And so is Yemen's popular Ansarullah movement, whose state-of-the-art means of defense will definitely be at the service of the oppressed Palestinian people. Then there is the Hashd al-Sha'bi, or the Popular Mobilization Force of Iraq, whose groups such as Ashab al-Haq and Harakat Hezbollah on Nujaba have already made public their vowed vengeance against the Zionist regime's crimes against Islamic sanctities. One of the statements from Baghdad reads, Iraqi resistance forces are fully prepared to do whatever is necessary to ensure the continuation of the Palestinian struggle until the usurping Israeli regime is annihilated. The Islamic Republic of Iran definitely supports the mobilization of forces all over the Muslim world for the cherished goal of liberation of Islam's former Qibla, or direction of prayer, and has made it clear to the UN that the only peaceful and democratic solution to the chronic question of Palestine is a referendum for one single country and government, and the exit of all Jews of foreign origin from the land. Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Magic returns to Belgium with a purple carpet of bluebells covering the undergrowth of Hallerbos woods near Brussels. Each spring, this beech forest turns into a bluebell spectacular, turning the area into a natural wonderland. Millions of these blooming flowers sprout up across the 550-hectare woods, filling the air with their sweet aroma. The short but enchanting blooming phase offers nature enthusiasts a one-of-a-kind experience.
It is an outstanding and magical place because whenever we come, there's an amazing atmosphere. The sunrise was truly beautiful this morning, and we know this offers the opportunity to take great photos and decorate our house. It is a great comfort during these tough times.
Visitors can stroll the winding paths and watch rabbits and deer wandering through the woods. The forest floor blooms for a period of 7 to 10 days. After this time, leaves begin to grow on the trees above them, blocking the sunlight from reaching the flowers. The phenomenon of bluebell forest is not uncommon in Europe, but the Hallerbos greenery is unique for the density and beauty of its blossoms.
A batch of autonomous delivery vehicles has been provided to facilitate personnel and volunteers in the streets and communities of Shanghai. The self-driving vehicles distribute supplies to residents in the Chinese megacity, which is now hit hard by the Omicron variant of the coronavirus. The vehicles reduce person-to-person contact and largely lower the risk of infection. A community served by the distribution station has more than 30 apartment buildings and nearly 3,000 residents. The weight of each order is more than 5 kilograms, which puts great pressure on the volunteers to deliver. 49 autonomous delivery vehicles have been sent to communities, colleges, and hospitals in Shanghai to support anti-pandemic and supply work. Sunny skies and spring temperatures made for the perfect setting for the 65th birthday of Fatu, the world's oldest gorilla living at Berlin Zoo. At this age, the Western lowland gorilla is what Berlin Zoo calls almost something of a legend. Gorillas living in the wild have a life expectancy of about 40 years, and at 65, she has been the world's oldest living gorilla for a while. 65 is absolutely extraordinary, and that obviously needs to be celebrated in style.
They mainly get vegetables, and the sugar they receive at most is fruit sugar, and that's what she saw for today in the shape of raspberries and blueberries. They were the decoration on rice cake made of boiled rice, a thin layer of rice and some curd so it sticks together. The bottom was made of a lot of green stuff, then the lion and lettuce.
According to Berlin Zoo, Western lowland gorillas are now an endangered species after their natural habitat was continuously decimated, and therefore fewer and fewer animals live in the tropical rainforest of Cameroon, the Central African Republic, Gabon, and the Republic of Congo. The World of Opera is opening its doors to the deaf community for the very first time. The Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra has teamed up with the Deaf West Theater to stage a production of Beethoven's only opera, Fidelio, at their home at the Walt Disney Hall. The chorus will be performed by the White Hands Choir, a group from Venezuela consisting of disabled children and young adults who sing as well as sign. The production pairs up a singer and a deaf actor to both inhabit the one role on stage. Having deaf actors perform alongside opera singers, however, has its challenges, not least of which is keeping up the rhythm of the music.
I think probably that there's a lot of tempo that I've been rehearsing. A lot of times when the singers hold the same word, but the next time they say that exact same word in the next few bars, they don't hold it as long. So trying to remember all of those is very difficult. So are they holding this for four beats or two beats? Or what word is this in this thing?
The challenge with opera is that it's very fluid and it's not repetitive. The tempos change throughout it, and night to night it even changes. The conductor, you know, kind of changes how he conducts things each night, and so that is something that is challenging.
The opera singers also give small cues to the actors, like opening a letter or sitting down or standing up, to keep them informed where they are in the piece. The deaf cast use theatrical ASL, or American Sign Language, in the production. DJ Kurs, the producer at the Deaf West Theater, says the performance is a little bit more poetic and a little bit more kind of picturesque.
A startup in the U.S. state of California is turning science fiction into reality by sending tiny robots on a fantastic voyage inside humans to treat brain disorders. The smart cells are small enough to be injected and can be carefully guided through the brain using magnetic coils placed outside of the patient's skull. The coils are linked to a computer that can remotely maneuver the robots through delicate pathways into the affected part of the brain. The micro robots are also removed by rewinding them through the same route. The developers at Bionaut Labs say these robots are extremely important when it comes to zero failure sensitive surgeries.
For localized conditions such as cancer tumors, stroke, atherosclerotic plaque buildup, localized pain, and many other conditions, there is a real need to have a microrobotic, precise, remote-controlled mechanism that can treat a condition only at a specific point and nowhere else.
The startup has already tested the robots on large animals. Inventors hope to use the robot to pierce fluid-filled cysts within the brain when clinical trials on humans begin in 2 years. If approved, they could offer key advantages over more invasive and dangerous treatments for brain disorders.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Floating solar panels help landowners benefit from underused body of water. Now, a German company is covering 14,000 square meters of a lake with these panels, turning it into the biggest solar park in the country. The park is built by a family-owned company called Quartzwerk, which specializes in extracting and processing industrial minerals. The company says it wants to become independent of fossil energy sources amid rising energy prices. The head of the Floating Panel Corporation says they will be generating around 3 million kilowatts per hour of green electricity on the surfaces of Limmersheim Lake in southern Germany.
The
plan can make a super big contribution to the land-neutral energy transition, because here an unused lake that was previously used for gravel extraction is being converted into a power plant for renewable energy.
Installation and maintenance of the panels are easy and safe, while they also offer a significant reduction in evaporation from the water surface. According to the company, this will save around 1,100 tons of carbon dioxide each year.
A restaurant in the Indonesian capital of Jakarta is taking fine dining to new heights, literally and figuratively, by giving diners a one-of-a-kind experience 50 meters above ground. The restaurant is called Lounge in the Sky. Diners are securely strapped into seats fixed to a table and are hoisted into the air using a heavy-duty lift. First, the gourmet meals are prepared in the main kitchen. Then, the food is loaded onto the platform where the dishes are plated and served to the patrons. The suspended guests are able to take advantage of breathtaking views as they gently rotate at great heights.
At first, it was not easy. I was nervous that I wouldn't be able to swallow the food, let alone drink. But after some time, I could eventually eat. It was thrilling.
While enjoying the meals, the guests use seat belts and the accompanying staff are equipped with safety harnesses. The guests are also briefed on safety regulations before the platform is raised. Diners call the one-hour experience exhilarating and worth the high price. The project developers say the restaurant was aimed at reviving local and international tourism sector after a big slump during the COVID-19 pandemic. The culinary experience is a first in Indonesia and the third in the world after Belgium and Malaysia.
South Koreans are getting outside to enjoy the open air with a local cherry blossom festival in central Seoul. This is while the country has been dealing with an ongoing surge of the Omicron variant of COVID-19. With some performances and the beauty of spring, many people look forward to turning the corner on the pandemic. Frank Smith has a story.
Spring has come to South Korea, and the cherry blossoms are blooming.
COVID-19 restrictions on gatherings are finally being eased, and at Ansan Park in central Seoul, a small festival is bringing everyone back out.
I first came here with my friends 4 years ago, but we couldn't come for the past 2 years because of COVID. I was impressed to see so many people no longer being overly careful about COVID, and we're also very happy to be able to attend festivals like this one.
South Koreans have been quite diligent in observing social distancing guidelines and wearing masks. The Omicron variant of COVID-19 has been quite severe here, with cases only recently declining below 200,000 per day. Still, the government's decided to open up. From the open-air stage, Noh Ah Ram and his band entertain a crowd that's anxious to finally get outside and enjoy group activities.
Ever since COVID, and particularly for the entirety of 2021, when the pandemic was at its peak, I have been unable to perform. I felt today was a restart. Spring has come, the weather's great, the blossoms beautiful, and I felt all of this was celebrating today's show.
South Korea's vaccination rate is nearly 90%, with children now getting the jab.
At first, I was very scared of COVID as I felt it was life-threatening. But now I feel okay with it because I consider it an experience and a certain reality. Also, I worry less because of the vaccines and the new medications.
The cherry blossoms blooming has been tracked from Jeju Island in the south and up to the capital as warm weather moved north. And with this change in seasons, attitudes toward life with COVID are changing as well. Frank Smith, Seoul.
The first all-private space crew has successfully docked at International Space Station after spending over 20 hours en route. Three paying customers and a former NASA astronaut will spend 10 days aboard the ISS. The tourists will participate in scientific research, including stem cell experiments and exploring how the body ages in space. The civilian crew were launched into space in a SpaceX rocket from the Kennedy Space Center on Friday. The trip was brokered by Axiom Space, which is the U.S.-based startup that coordinates rocket rides and provides necessary training. It's not the first time paying customers have visited the ISS. Russia sold seats on its Soyuz spacecraft last year. But this is the first mission that includes a crew entirely comprised of civilians.
A new selfie museum in Sweden is flipping the script by making visitors both the artist and the exhibit. The establishment is dubbed the Museum and is in a shopping mall in Stockholm. Unlike other selfie museums, this one has no works of art on its walls. Instead, its brightly decorated rooms are meant to serve as fun backgrounds for visitors to take their selfies or shoot videos in. Other rooms let the visitors bury themselves in candy-colored foam bricks, strike a pose under neon lights, or sit on a huge, colorful swing. The manager says the museum is interactive and lets the visitors be the artists themselves in order to create the art they want to see.
IRIB English Radio.